need an introduction, but I'll give one anyway, to the pastor of Brisbane, Australia, Mr. Bill Bradford.
Well, good afternoon.
It's nice to be at a place where you need no introduction. I will tell you that Mr. Dick did add, he had one more thing that he wanted to add, by the way, to his statement that there were three Bill Bradfords in the room. He says, you don't get any points to guess which one is the best looking one. Okay. There we go. Very nice to be back here in Chicago again to see everybody. I always enjoy your friendliness and, of course, your well wishes, as we receive them all the time from you when we come. We appreciate that. And I want to bring you greetings from Drew and Debbie Efimoff. Right? Where's? Oh, there you are. I thought you knew you were around somewhere. It was the glow from the. Kind of gave it away. Now Drew is exactly the same, hairline. Where's Brett? Did he get an excused absence? Okay, that's all I want to know. Good. Okay, I like to always have a little bit of a go at Brett, you know. It's always a lot of fun. But since he's not here, we'll have to forego that. Let's say things are going quite well in Australia. I don't know what update I can give to you. We're moving quite along with good attendance, good increases in both attendances and baptisms and increase in income, which enables us to move forward with the work. This year in January, we hired 2.5 people. we pity the poor guy that was only half a person. But what this means is that we were able to hire an elder for half time, as he was able to reduce his contract work to work half time and still do that, then we can hire him for the other half and use him there too. So we did that for 1 year to help us out with our shortage of our ministers in the country. But we hired, brought over another young man from South Africa. Went through the process of getting to know him and interviewing him, and we felt he would be a good addition to the Australian church and work. And so we hired him. He came over this January, and he started up in Brisbane with me. And we certainly need him there. Then we also hired another young man in New South Wales who did not have any Ambassador College training. Up until now, we have been hiring people with Ambassador College. They've been graduates, and so we know that they have had that background. And we feel that we wanted to move in that area simply because sooner or later we're going to have to be doing that anyway. But we felt we were in a very good position to be able to take a person and that we felt quite confident about and begin the training process, even though it might take just somewhat longer, of course, and then to bring him up to the point where he could become, a church pastor in his own right. So we're confident that we're able to now move in that direction and take that on. So that gives you, our strategy has been, of course, to put our funds primarily into preaching the gospel, which we've been very aggressive in doing, especially increasing the subscription to the Good News magazine, from which we get a very good return from in terms of responses. And we're very happy with that as it is, and it only gets better as the Good News magazine also gets better. in its capacity to do what it's designed to do, and that is to bring the gospel message to the world. And so we're getting very good responses there, but that's been pretty much the strategy, is to put our funds into that. And to, so far as the ministry was concerned, we had to bite the bullet for a little bit. And then now, once we have a certain amount of growth, now it warrants us doing the hiring. So we feel we are just about where we want to be now. And that, in that way, we do have quite a good plan for other people to come along and to join us in the ministry as the years go by. And as some of the years, well, the likes of me, I suppose, we sort of, what do? You just kind of drop off. What do we do? I don't know. Trying to figure out. What do? I guess we'll find out when we get there, don't we? So anyway, we've got a very good succession plan. We know who's coming along. We know who's able to step up. We know in terms of a five-year plan, seven-year plan, so on, just about where they can start to come on and be trained to take over the pastorate and an increasing and growing area also. So all of these are, while they are challenges, we've laid pretty much the groundwork, and we've got a lot of these things in the pipeline. So we're very pleased at where we are now. It took a number of years to bring it to this point, but we're very satisfied with how it has come about. Now, of course, in terms of preaching the gospel, we're still very aggressive with that. We're not able to cut back on that at all. Matter of fact, we do forge ahead with this, and we feel that we have to do this, especially with our print media. Though it may cost a little bit more than the internet, we find that our returns are quite good. Matter of fact, quite better from our print media than simply the internet in terms of people who respond to us by way of contributions and co-workers and who eventually become members. They seem to make that kind of a very good commitment whenever they actually order something from us, but they get something free off the internet. They say, thank you very much, and off they go. You do have a lot of incident in that. I'm not saying that's always the case, but this has been our experience anyway. Though we do plan on doing quite a bit more with our internet as we are here, we know to some extent that is going to bear fruit. So we're very pleased with where we're at, as I stated before, and we do have challenges ahead. We do have further ideas as to how to move it forward in terms of preaching the gospel, and if I'm here again next year, I'll let you know how things go. Now, when I'm here, I always make an inquiry as to where the clock is. Yes, I noticed all of you knew that. That was meant to be a joke. But I also noticed you're not facing the clock. So if you tend to drop your pencil on the floor and say, oh, excuse me, then I'll know you do have a way of checking. That is, if you don't have your watch. I don't have a watch. I do have a watch. I didn't bring it today. I don't know why I didn't. I really don't like things on my wrist for some reason, so I tend not to wear one. Now, we've talked about Australia for just a moment. How many of you know who the new prime minister is? One person, two persons. Who's Efimov? You don't know. Ah, okay. I bet you will after this feast. Right. We do have a new prime minister. He is a man by the name of Kevin Rudd, who is now the leader of the Labour Party. In fact, Kevin Rudd was named by Time magazine as one of the 100 most influential people on the planet. Now, it shows you how much influence he has here, that not very many people knew who he was. But anyway, Time magazine thought so, and he's only been the prime minister since November, I believe it was it not, when we had the election. Now, there's a little bit of a story behind that. Mr. Rudd is a very intelligent and a very smart man. And some 1 year before this. He was not even the leader of the Labour Party in our parliamentary system that we have here. The person who is selected by their party to be the leader of the party becomes the Prime Minister if his party gets the most seats. Now, the Liberal Party, which is actually Conservative, just thought I would explain that, where Labour is Liberal. That's just how they term it. The Liberal Party was in office for 12, 14 years, I can't remember the exact number, and they were very, very successful with the economy. The economy of Australia has gone ahead every year, without a downturn. As a matter of fact, the increase every year has been quite considerable. For the past 12, 14 years, we haven't had a downturn, and it's still powering ahead in spite of something of a downturn globally. In any case, particular party in office took full credit for that, of course, as they always do, along with if it rains and all good things happening, they take credit for that too. But if, this particular party was voted out. The Labour Party got in. About a year before all of this happened, we were privy to a conversation which included the now Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, and was discussing in that particular conversation, and we know it took place because of one of my wife's relatives, close relatives, was in the conversation, was participating in it, in which Kevin Rudd was discussing openly whether he should challenge the then leader of that party, and which would then go on to the next election, which would then make him Prime Minister. And the person who was the then leader of the Labour Party was a long-time Labourite and mentored by two previous prime ministers. It's quite interesting how all of that happened, but he never could win an election. However, the discussion took place like this, that if you made the right moves, if you had the correct strategy, if you won the support of whomever you need to do this, it would, of course, take some planning and thought, then you could do this. And he was encouraged to make those kinds of moves. Now, no doubt other conversations also took place about that time discussing the same thing with other people because he was exploring his options and exploring his tactics, exploring his strategy as to how he would do that. So the question is, how do you get to be where you are at that point to become Prime Minister? Let me just say very clearly, you need to know how things work. And you need to do, of course, the right thing. Today's subject is godly wisdom, human wisdom, and the devil's wisdom. I want to talk to you about those three wisdoms today. And wisdom can be defined in this way. Or one way we can define wisdom more correctly. Wisdom is simply knowing how things work so you can have a certain outcome should you follow those principles of that wisdom. Wisdom is knowing the end of a matter. It is the outcome or the result of a certain course of action and thought. Now, you and I are advised to seek wisdom. We're told to do this by God. And in a number of places in the Bible, we're told to seek wisdom, but we are told more specifically to seek His wisdom. Now, in telling us that's what we should do, it is implied that maybe we don't have it, at least in the way we should have it, in the opinion of God, by the way, in the opinion of God. It's not something that anybody can say of you, oh, well, you have wisdom or you don't have wisdom. God himself tells us we don't have his wisdom. Now, you may have wisdom. Now, I gave you an example of how a person was able to do the right things with respect to getting ahead in this world. That is a wisdom. He considered what the possible outcome. He considered his plans. He got counsel and how to do this. And he did, from what we could tell, he did the right things from start to finish, and it worked. He had an outcome. So you might say the fact that he knew how to do those kind of things, that he had a wisdom. We're not talking about that kind of wisdom. That's a human wisdom, and we'll talk about that in a moment, and I will define it for you a little bit better as we go along. But when God says to seek his wisdom, that is also a know-how. It is skill in living according to God's way. It is skill, of course, in knowing a lot of things. But there is a different outcome than what you will get if you use human wisdom. Now, if we're going to get the right results, we ought to seek his wisdom. How many of us ask for wisdom each day? That is God's wisdom. That's a very important thing to do. I don't know if you make that a priority. It's something that we should do and simply ask God for wisdom. Wisdom to know what to do, wisdom to know how to respond in certain situations, wisdom to know how what you should say, what you should not say, and how you should conduct yourself with other people, individuals, or in the company of people, or in even organizations. There's wisdom in all of this. There is a wisdom for a ruler. There's wisdom in knowing how you should conduct yourself and conduct your life for not only your benefit, but for the benefit of others. The benefit, if you have a family, for the benefit of your children even. There's a wisdom in knowing how to conduct yourself and what to say. Now, maybe some of us never ask for wisdom. I'm just simply saying it's something you should do. We can start with that. We certainly should. But when you do, you ought to know a little more about what it is you're asking for and what it is that God will give. James 1, verse 5, we're told this: if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, James 1, 5, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given him. Now, I understand Mr. Fay has really gone over the book of James, and I don't think that I may not tell you very much about the book of James today if I go through it, which I will, on some things we're going to say today. Now, but God says up front, if you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who will give to all liberally and without reproach. Why would God tell you that you can ask God, and he will give it to you liberally, and he is not going to reproach you for asking. And he will give it to you, providing you ask in faith, of course, with no doubting. Why is that? First of all, he knows the kind of wisdom that he's speaking of is his wisdom, and he also knows you don't have it. You know, we ought to settle that real fast before we go on from here, that we don't have his wisdom. You aren't born with it, and you cannot acquire it. That is, of and by yourself. It has to be given to you. Now, you might have a lot of wisdom, but as we were defining our wisdom today, you might see that a lot of that is human wisdom that you've got off the street. Let me just suggest to you that anything you pick up off the street didn't come from above. Okay. And a lot of people have a lot of street wisdom. That tells you how to get along in this world. I'm telling you how to get along, yes, also in this world, but in the next world or in the next age too, because there is a wisdom of this age that the Bible speaks of. But it's clear that there is more than one kind of wisdom. There are other kinds of wisdom. In James chapter 3, verse 13, James 3:13, it says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in meekness of wisdom. Now, this is a very interesting definition of wisdom here. He goes, we'll read the rest here, but I want you to take note where it says, if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there, But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Now, there are two kinds of wisdom spoken of here. What are they? You got the wisdom of the devil and the wisdom from God. Doesn't mention human wisdom. I mentioned that a few minutes ago. I'm going to show you the three kinds of wisdom today. But it says here that, verse 16, for where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. So it shows a fruit. Peace is also a fruit. It's interesting the way wisdom is spoken of here is that you do have a result, or you have an outcome. And that's one thing that perhaps should be emphasized throughout this message today, that there is always an outcome. No matter what you do, there's always an outcome and result. I think last time I was here, I talked to you about it in terms of consequences. But let's talk about it today in terms of an outcome. There's always a result. Depending on what you do. And so you have a certain wisdom which determines your conduct, what that conduct is. And there will be an outcome. Now, let's go back to what he said here. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good. Why is he saying that? Now, if you check the context, he is speaking of a person who is a teacher. Chapter 3, verse 1. You have it there. My brethren, be not many teachers. He's not saying you shouldn't aspire to be a teacher, but what you should beware of is that there are a number of difficulties, one is which you're going to be judged according to what you say. God always says that. By your words, you will be judged. In addition to your conduct. But if you say or claim that you're going to be a teacher, one of the first things that is characteristic of a good teacher is that done. So if it does that again, it's one of your phones. Is that it is shown by good conduct, and the works are done in the meekness of wisdom. This is characteristic of it. Now, why is it said that? It's said in the context of a teacher, which we should be. All of us are teachers in some manner, some form or another. And hopefully in the next stage, we're going to be teachers in a formal sense, because that's what our calling is. Now, so this is said in the context of being a teacher. And any person who is a teacher, the first requirement of a teacher is that he has to live by what he teaches. We teach the ways of God. Any contradiction, as he said here, do not boast and lie against the truth. So any contradiction or perceived contradiction nullifies what we say. Goes a long way to do that in any case. So it is shown first, or one might say foremost, by one's conduct. You might think a person might be known for what his wisdom is known by what he says. It is known foremost by what he does. That's a very important thing to understand, especially so in the context of a family, is that children learn by your preaching. You go for that? I hope not. They learn by what they see. I got a little grandson there, and he started making noises like he's speaking. He's seeing it. He's watching it. He's hearing it. And so he tries to do the same thing. He does what he sees. So too your children, they do what they see. Wisdom is first of all taught by what you do. Then you support it by what you say. If we do the reverse, I think we're not going to have the best results. So it has to be deeply within the person. So that's why it says, do not boast and lie against the truth that you might you might speak and teach cannot be contradicted by what you do. It is done, second point, it is done in the meekness of wisdom, it says. The characteristic of wisdom is meekness. Wisdom does not have to be forceful. It does not have the use of authority as its base, though when demonstrated, it is authoritative, because it carries with it its own authority, its own self-evident truth, if I can put it that way. But it would mean that it is not loud, it is not imposing, it is not forceful. It doesn't have to be, but you'll find that there is another wisdom that is forceful, that does rely upon strength and might, as we're going to see. And of course, it relies upon a person who is extremely articulate. That there is a wisdom that relies upon that. This does not say that this wisdom relies upon that or has that as its characteristic, but it says it is done in the meekness of wisdom. Now it says the wisdom that is from above is first pure. Let's go through these very, very briefly here to define this kind of wisdom. First of all, there is no ulterior or selfish motives. That's what pure means in that sense. It is when one acts and speaks, the best interest of the other person is in mind. Peaceable. So when it is said, demonstrated, or spoken, it is non-threatening. It does not result, let's say, in contention or strife or envy or any of those, some of these other devilish characteristics. Gentle. That's another word for meekness, by the way. And carries with it, as we have already described. Willingness to yield. In the old King James, we say easy to be entreated. It doesn't mean that you agree with everything that is obviously wrong, but it's not demanding of one's own way. It does not force itself upon you. It simply is able to demonstrate and state obvious truths, and it does rely upon that. But when you begin to demand your own way against a person's will, you're not going to get the best results. A person will be of his same opinion still, as we say. And you have to understand first before you are understood. We have a lot of sayings like that demonstrate that. Full of mercy. How many of people know what it's like to go down the wrong track in our own attitude and conduct? Anybody not experienced that? I think we all have. That we've gone down the wrong road in our thoughts and our attitude, our conduct sometimes, that show, hopefully, we've received mercy. We ought to be able to extend that. It is wisdom. It is a very wise thing to do, to extend mercy. Even Proverbs, or even some Proverbs about that. Good fruits. That is, good results. It does get good results. Some of those results are not exactly measurable. We talked about measuring results and outcomes at our conference, and some are soft. That's the term that was used. In other words, you may not see immediately the results, but what you have to know is, am I on the right track in what I'm doing, in the way I'm doing it, because I am convinced and assured that I will have a certain outcome down here, though I may not fully see that outcome now. We're going to see that the devil's wisdom and even human wisdom has some immediate outcomes. That may not be the way to do them. But we have to be confident in what we're doing. We have to be confident that we are following the principles of the proper, right wisdom in order to get the best possible outcome. And if for you to be reassured of that outcome, those good fruits that are going to happen, you also have to know how to get there. And then you stay on that course. You don't depart from that course without partiality. One rule applies to all. No favoritism here. God's laws, God's principles, everything applies to everybody. You see it that way. You abide by it. This brings into the next point, without hypocrisy. Wisdom doesn't change. It speaks of God, with God, and in whom there is no variableness. You can absolutely count on the truth that he speaks. It is not, let's say, good for most people, but some people are the exception. It doesn't work that way. It's consistent all the way through. It doesn't matter who you are. It is going to be the same for all people. Now, the devil's wisdom, however, in contrast with that, is earthly. That's what we read here. Verse 15. It is earthly, sensual, and devilish. Doesn't come from above. Comes from below. Earthly simply means it's not from God. It's of the world. Now you might ask the question, well, does it work? Sure it works. People get results of this all the time. You might ask what kind of results. Let's notice the kind of results it gets. It says it's sensual. That is, it caters to the fleshly senses, pride, desire for power, personal gain, the gain as to what you can have in this age. See, the devil has set up a whole system by which certain methods, if you utilize them, work. You're going to be successful. How would you measure that success? You would measure that success in terms of how prominent or influential you can become, how important you can become, your position or status in this world, how recognized you are, how powerful you are, what position you will have, how much material wealth and gain you will have. Did you ever notice it's kind of surrounding about, it has to do with yourself. 1 John, don't go away from here. Let me just quote 1 John chapter 2, verse 16 for you to show you that it is really of this age. There is a wisdom that does benefit a person in this age according to the criteria as to what is successful in this age. He says, don't love the world, verse 15, or the things in the world. I might ask at this point, I didn't intend to, but what kind of wisdom is that? Well, if you don't love the things in this world, and aren't all the success books, I've seen so many success plans, and they all revolve around what? How much you can have. And they talk about your vacations, your big house, your leisure, and your security. You ever see the infomercials on that? I always wondered if these people were so successful, how come they're trying to tell you? I don't know. I'm not so sure they are all that successful. But anyway, that's what they are. All right, so we have a wisdom here. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but it is of the world. So you got a whole system that's of this world that works in this world. If you want to use those principles, and a lot of people do, and the better you are at using those principles of wisdom to how to get ahead in this world, the more you're going to have, the more power you're going to have, the more influence you're going to have, the more security you're going to have, because you're above anybody able to reach you. Isn't that what people want? They don't want to be vulnerable. But the world is passing away. So we got a little problem with this, don't we? And the lust of it. And he who does the will of God abides forever. Are you convinced of your methods? Because it says, he who does the will of God abides forever. Now, that's where you want to go. You might say, well, yeah, what I'm doing is not quite working in this world. That's right, it won't. Will it work forever? Yes, it will. Can you be assured of that? Depends on whether you believe the Bible or not. Now, that, of course, what this is all about. We need to actually ask, do we believe what the Bible says? There's always a fruit here. Does the devil have a wisdom? Certainly, he does. But his wisdom does not come from above. This is his wisdom. So James is contrasting right here two kinds of wisdom. Let's go to Ezekiel 38 very briefly here, and I want to make one or two points. I think that might be helpful. Ezekiel 28:12. Now, here was a cherub. We know that because it calls him that. This in 12, Ezekiel 28:12b, that is the last part of this verse. You were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Now, what kind of wisdom was this that he had in the beginning of his creation? Well, that would be God's wisdom. In other words, God then gave to this being wisdom that he said he was full of. Wow, that would be fantastic to have this kind of wisdom, to be full of that wisdom. Not only that, to be good looking to go along with it. Now, it says, all of this was prepared in you, the end of verse 13, on the day that you were created. Verse 14, you were the anointed cherub who covers. So we have a very special creation by God here and established. And he was, verse 15, you were perfect in your ways, which indicates the kind of wisdom he had. You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created till iniquity was found in you. So now we have sin. He speaks of him in verse 16 right at the end as a covering cherub. I simply want to make it very clear that we are talking about a created angelic being of the highest order here. Verse 17, your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. Some of you might say, or some of us might say, no chance of that. I thought I would get a chuckle out of that one, but I see I won't. All right. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. It didn't say he lost his wisdom. It simply says he corrupted his wisdom. Now, the wisdom then that he had was a certain kind of wisdom. Wisdom is simply knowing how things work to gain a certain result. Wisdom is knowing the end from the beginning. And you know if you do these things in a certain way, you're going to get a certain result. The wisdom of the devil did not bring peace. He didn't intend it to bring peace. It would bring war. So he ascended. He wanted to become as God, as we read in Isaiah 14. His concern was for himself. It was inward. It was all about him, what he could have, what he could be, what he could become. That was it. Is this any different from what you hear in the world today? Remember, the wisdom from above is pure. Doesn't have a wrong motive. We got another motive here. So his wisdom involves how you can have for yourself as much as you can get for your own importance, and how all of that can be achieved. You have a whole system then that was devised that concentrated on a person's power, on a person's status, position, security, and gained by certain methods designed to achieve that. So when you have a system, you have to design the methods to achieve what will work within that system. Basically one that was founded on the idea of self, how the self could be benefited. And as Mr. Armstrong explained on so many occasions, there is a way of love And then there's the way of evil, which he said basically was selfish. And that's what the devil devised. This is what he created. He created a whole system then in which you could be benefited. Now, the problem with that is, and they don't tell you this, that only the few are benefited. Think about that one for a moment. The devil benefited a system. Who was going to benefit the most from his system? Got it. Okay. Make no mistake. Any system outside of God's system then does not benefit everybody. God's system is the only one that benefits all. That's the way he set it up. And you have to use the right methods to achieve that. Whereas the devil's system benefits first of all him, and then a few others, and then the rest, nothing but fodder. Sorry, folks, that's just the way it works. Then I don't tell you all of this. And you see anything from a pyramid scheme to all the success stories, not everybody achieves it. The few do. The few. And my wife was on the phone to a person who wanted to sell her on this system of, what was it, trading in securities? Yeah. And so he gave the spiel. She questioned him on it. She says, now just tell me honestly. She says, how many people actually make a success with this? And he was honest. He says, a very few. Now, that's what they don't tell you. So you can have a lot of schemes out here. You can have a lot of systems. In this world, how many achieve the kind of success that the world defines? The few. The minority, not the majority. In God's, imagine this now, and I think you can. In the next age, in the next world, under Christ, when everything that's going to be put into practice, as the gentleman who gave the sermonette said that we ought to be learning now, God's ways, God's commandments, and you put that into practice, then is everybody going to benefit? Is everybody going to have an opportunity? And is anybody left out? I think you're going to find everybody benefits from that. That's God's system. That's how it works. Because you're concerned about other people. And there is a mind of Christ that's a part of this. He said, let this mind be in you that has at its base the interest of others, that does not have selfish ambition, Philippians chapter 2. Okay, we'll read a little bit about that in just a moment. I don't want to get too carried away, but I simply want to show you the wisdom. Wisdom is knowing the end from the beginning. Now, it's a very interesting point here. Let me make this, that if God, or let me say since God, it's a better way of putting it, can create an angelic being from nothing and give to him wisdom just like that, do you think he could do the same with you if you asked for it? James 1 verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask for. Is that what God means? What do you think? Sure. He can give it to you. Have any of you ever experienced this, to where you didn't know the answer? All of a sudden it comes very clear. Perhaps you're seeking an answer. You're looking to God for answers. And then the wisdom of how you should conduct yourself, and how you should think about a certain particular situation that you're in, kind of comes to mind. So what's happened? If you're, you've turned to God and you're yielded to God, then God is able then to give you that kind of wisdom. But you might also ask, how else does God give you wisdom? That's not the only way. If we think we're going to, there are several other ways that are not as easy. God does give you wisdom, but you should certainly seek for it in prayer, through your own personal study. You study the precepts of wisdom that God gives in his Bible. Then God also, which the part we may not like, through experience. In the process, God's still there, but you go through a certain experience. So there are various other ways of seeking for wisdom. Definition of wisdom? Wisdom is knowing how things work to gain a certain result. It is knowing the end from the beginning. You know that if you do things in a certain way, you're going to get a certain result. You absolutely know that. There is no guesswork about it. It is certain. And we ought to then ask ourselves, what kind of results do we get? Now, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 19. Let's talk about human wisdom for a moment to see if we can make this as clear as we can. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 19. We'll begin there, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Well, what's wrong with wisdom of the wise and what's wrong with being prudent? Well, speaking of a certain wisdom and prudence in this way, that is the cleverness to use knowledge, reason, and logic to gain the superior position. This is the wisdom of the wise that he's speaking of here. Well, where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer or the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? So we have a wisdom of this world, could, of course, which would also include the devil's wisdom, but now we're talking about the cleverness of people, the wisdom of knowing how things work. For since in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. Human wisdom. How things work in this world. Some people are very good at this. Human wisdom perhaps is a mixture of the devil's wisdom, having the aim of promoting one's own interest, coupled with some principles of godly wisdom. That is having to some degree the interest of others also. As I suggested to you, we have politicians now who are very smart people. They know what to do. They know what to say. You might think, well, no, they don't know what to say. But they supposedly know what to say. And they're supposed to show deep concern about you. So you will do what? Vote for them. Okay, so we have a mixture here. Concern for others, the best interest of others. You vote for me, help me to get what I want, the presidency. And I will help you to get what you want. We have a little bit of a mixture here, don't we? It's not pure. So we have human wisdom. The world's wisdom, however, is limited to what it knows. It does say here, through wisdom, it did not know God. That is human wisdom. It doesn't know God. Now, it doesn't mean, let me explain this point here. It doesn't mean that through human wisdom or through human cleverness, through human intelligence, a human observation, you don't know that there isn't a God. No, you can know that there is a God simply through your own powers of intelligence and observation. Of course you can. Paul himself says that. But they knew that there was a God. You can, by the creation, take a look at it and reason by what you see. If you examine it closely enough, you will see there is, after all, an intelligent design. And you can go through, try to understand the universe. David says it. He looked at it. He said, wow, this is God here. What does it tell you? It tells you there is a God. Can you know something about that God? Yes, you can. You can also reason. And it is within the capability of human reasoning that you can also reason that something about that God, that God has to be a good God, not a bad God. The ancients were not able to reason that. They had their gods, plural. And some were good, some were bad, and you had to treat them just right. Otherwise, bad things might happen to you. That's how they looked upon their gods. They did it with Baal, and they did it in Italy. They did it in Greece with their various gods. And that's how they looked at it. However, if you reason correctly enough, you can know enough. You can know enough to determine there is a God. He is an intelligent God, and he is a good God. Irrespective of everything else you might say, you can know this through reason and through observation, through human intelligence. What don't you know? You don't know the purpose of God. You'll never know that. That's revealed. There's a lot about what God is doing and a lot about what you're here for and what God is going to achieve through his own counsel that he didn't share with a lot of people, but he is sharing it with people whom he's calling. And so that's revealed by God. That has to be revealed by God. Mr. Armstrong explained that over and over again. You can't know this unless it is shown to you and revealed to you. Now, let's talk about human wisdom. Jesus said this, Luke 16, verse 8, to illustrate the point just a little bit further. He said, the children of this world are wiser than the children of light. And he said this at the conclusion of a parable of the unjust steward. Now, time doesn't permit us to go through that whole parable right now. But you had an unjust steward that Jesus says is wiser than the children of light. What are we to make of that? Now, it's the story of a person who was a steward. That is, he had oversight, and he was in charge of his master's finances and holdings. And he made loans out to some people that you might describe as subprime. Thought you would appreciate that. Now they had to be called in. And of course, his creditors couldn't pay up, and so it was going to be a bad loan. And so he goes to them and he says, well, just 80% will do. The person says, it's a good deal. And he does it, or 50% in another case. And I can't remember what it was in yet another case. But he was able then to go to the master's creditors, themselves being perhaps people of substance, and at least retrieve some of the loan. And the master commended the steward, correct? Commended the steward. Why? Well, I suspect the master could have lost some money. I don't know that he did, but he could have, depending on how much interest he drew before. But he doesn't look like it was a very good thing, but he said of this unjust steward that you're very shrewd. And Jesus said, because he made friends of the unrighteous mammon, meaning that he thought he was going to lose his job over this. And then where was he going to be then? He at least goes to the creditors, makes a pretty good deal with them, and if he does lose his job, he can go to one of them. He says, I did you a favor. How about a job? That's pretty smart. That's real smart. And Jesus has said, this guy is wise. That's what he said. Wise in what way? He knew how to work things in this world. He had that kind of wisdom. What kind of wisdom is this? Let's define it as human wisdom. Now, what Jesus said, that the children of this world are wiser in their generation, meaning in this age. That's all generation means. In this age, they're wiser in working the methods that will achieve certain results in this age than the children of light are in the business they should be in. That's all it means. So the children of light ought to be very good at doing God's business, which is understanding and promoting the spiritual, the truthful precepts of God, the character of God as it should then exist within each of us, how we go about increasing that talent in us, then, are we wise in those ways? Are we wise then in developing the mind of God within ourselves, the wisdom of God within ourselves, so that we know there's going to be a certain result at the end. One of those results is standing before Jesus Christ. And how then that's going to play out in the world tomorrow, and not what you're going to get right here in this age. I'm not saying you're not supposed to be wise in the matters of this age. Didn't say that at all. As a matter of fact, I suppose we are, and some of us could be perhaps very good at it. However, we have to also understand that there's more to knowing than simply how things work in this world. According to the systems in this world, we have to know how things are going to work for what's going to happen in the next world. And in our relationships with respect to other people, in our own families, within our own person, then there is a way in which we should seek to know about, and that this will always get the kind of results that God himself says will happen. Now let's notice in 1 Corinthians 1:22, the same chapter, for the Jews request a sign, the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified. To the Jews, a stumbling block, to the Greeks, foolishness. How wise is this? The Greeks didn't see this as wise. The Jews didn't see this as mighty, like a sign that's so convincing. Didn't do anything for them. But those who were called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God, and the wisdom of God. Christ, the wisdom of God. You mean that you're going to send the Creator himself to come down to this earth, be a human being, live amongst them, divest himself of his might and power and glory, and becomes a human being, and then he dies for those whom he created? What kind of wisdom is this? So I want to make distinction between God's wisdom and the way God does things and the way man would do them. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. Now why is that? Because they would see how God would do things is not that smart. What's it going to get you? So I think we see this. Not many wise according to the flesh. You can be wise according to the flesh, but you need to understand clearly what is going to benefit you in the flesh and in this age, and what's going to benefit you in the next age, which will also benefit you in this age, but people are sometimes blinded to that. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. What kind of wisdom would use the mighty and the wise to get the results they wanted? Well, that would be human wisdom. Might, power, more armies, more armaments, more authority, bigger, better, overwhelming odds. You know, just really roll over them. The wisdom of the mighty. That's the way it's done. People only respect that which is mighty. See, if you can pull off getting elected, if you can pull off winning the nomination of your party, if you can go through all of that, work your way up and knock off all of your opponents in your own party, and then upset your opponent in the other party, you deserve to be president. That's the way it works. So you got to know how to work it. These people up there, they know how to work it. They're pretty smart. They got a lot of smart advisors. And they're operating according to knowing what works in this age, right now, getting results that are quite immediate. Verse 28, and the base things of this world, and the things which are despised, the things which are despised, God has chosen, and the things which are not to bring to nothing, the things that are. Jesus was despised and rejected. And we did not esteem him. Doesn't sound like wisdom to me. You're going to get results. He came with no reputation. Is this the wisdom of God? As it says, made himself, we're going to read that in a moment, that no flesh should glory in his presence, but of him who are in Christ Jesus, who became for us the wisdom from God, and the righteousness and sanctification and redemption. And so we learned during the Passover season how God chose to bring salvation to the human race in this way. There was going to be a result. He sent Jesus, the second member of the God family, to this earth, relinquishing his powers, his authority, lived among us, died for us. This was a purpose that was designed before the very foundation of the world, and so that man would believe in God, come to trust God, never question his goodness and his love. And it was a long time in coming, but he knew that it would bring the desired results. He would have children. He would have children. He would have a family who would forever, forever, without fail, return his love and never turn against him. They would always be in submission to God and to Jesus Christ. It depends on what you're trying to accomplish. What is the result that you want? Philippians chapter 2. Now we have here a result, a very profound result in doing things God's way. Speaks of him, he did not consider it robbery to divest himself, to just simply hold on to what he was. He made himself of no reputation. He became a bondservant. Became a bondservant of all things. This is not wise in the eyes of the world. He should come in might, taking the form of a bondservant, coming in the likeness of men, being found in the appearance as a man. Verse 8, he humbled himself. Humility is wisdom. He humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Doesn't sound smart to me. That is, as a human being. Therefore, God also has highly exalted him and given him the name which is above every name, that at the same name of Jesus, at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow, of those in heaven and those on earth and those under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. What's he mean? This is results. You might say, and I've heard it preached this, well, I hope you don't say this, that the way God, he's going to make sure, they're going to bow even if he breaks their knees. You ever heard that? That is not, doesn't mean that. Not in the context. It means that he is going to assure that knees will bow and tongues will confess him because of what he did. Read the context. Here are people who would gladly, willingly turn to him forever, never turn against him, always freely return his love because of what he did. Jesus Christ, the wisdom of God, he knew the results he wanted, and he knew how he could get them, and he would get them as a result of the plan that he had from before the beginning, before the creation of the world, the universe, or anything. At some point, two great beings sat down before the universe was ever created and decided what they wanted to achieve. And this is what they wanted to achieve, and in their wisdom used the methods to achieve those results. They knew it would bring those results. Forget about what you see right now. This is this age. God knows that there's going to be a result where once they know who he is and what he did, yeah, they're going to turn to him. Maybe there will be some exceptions, but he's done every possible thing he can in such a way to obtain the best possible results. And that's the results he wanted. The people then would be would willingly, forever, without fail, always love their Creator and will never turn against him, but always be a part of his plan and a part of his counsel forever in his family. And that was the end result. And he said, before he ever started, here's how we're going to get those results. And they're sure. They're certain. It will happen. This tells us then, it should always tell us how something about God and in the wisdom of God. And we need to take a look at that ourselves and ask ourselves, do we get the same kind of wisdom? I mean, the same kind of results. There's the result of what we do. Wisdom was from the beginning with God. Proverbs 8:22, the Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way before the works of old. Verse 26, Proverbs 8:26, while he had not yet made the earth or the fields or the primal dust of the world. Now why ask for wisdom? Let's go back to James. Why ask for wisdom? Now, in verse 5, he says to ask for wisdom. James 1 and verse 2, it says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And then, if you need wisdom, you should ask for it, if that's what you lack. Why? Because you have to have the wisdom that comes from God to know why God is doing what he's doing in terms of various trials, and you know what it produces, and you know the end result, and you know where it's going, and you simply know this. Wisdom is knowing that there is a right outcome or result, and understanding that God has a purpose in what he's doing. And we know what that purpose is. That is, when we know what that purpose is, and you understand that, and you know how God is going to achieve it, then you're more stable in your thinking. You're more confident in what you know God is doing. And you have peace because you know and are assured of the outcome. A double-minded man, as it goes on to say, does not know and understand that. Wisdom is knowing that there is a right outcome. He said in verse 12, blessed is the man that endures trials or temptations, for when he has been approved, he will receive a crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Wisdom is knowing that this is the way it works. He endures temptations and trials. He has his priorities right. He receives a crown of life. You know this is the outcome. Now, Paul then speaks of godly wisdom in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 1. And I, brethren, when I came to you, did not use excellence of speech or of wisdom, declaring to you the testimony of God. He didn't come the way the Greeks do in the great oratory or tradition, talking about the testimony of God. Testimonies of God don't need to be spoken of in that way. For I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I was with you in weakness and in fear and much trembling. And my speech and my preaching were not with persuasive words of human wisdom, but in the demonstration of the Spirit and of power. So he didn't use the human wisdom to speak about God. And can speech be persuasive? Absolutely, it can be persuasive. But he spoke the truth in the wisdom of God. However, we speak wisdom that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Nevertheless, we speak wisdom among those who are mature, yet not the wisdom of this age. And so when you come here, you don't learn how to do better in the stock market. You don't learn how to do better in, it's not some seminar on success in this age. What you have here is to understand how you're going to be a success by using the principles of God in your own life now, and you will be a success in the next world too. We speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the ages for our glory, which nobody knew. Now, the thoughts of the wise are futile, he says, 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 20. That is, they're temporary. They get a temporary result. Therefore, let no one boast in men, for all things are yours. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 21. Now, what were the Corinthians doing? They were getting little power bases lining up behind men. I am of Paul, I am of Apollos, and God says, you are following the ways of the world. Don't bring us into the church of God. He said, we've got a different system here. There is a glory in boasting or lining up behind a person. That's what this was all about. That's why he was telling them this. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 10. Let's back up just a few verses. He says, according to the grace of God, which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it, but I let each one take heed on how he builds on it. Paul says, I am a wise master builder. This is the foundation. I'm not going to be suckered into any other kind of way or ideas in which is going to get me different results. He says, I refuse to do that. And he was very, very patient then in telling them about the ways of God all throughout the book of 1 Corinthians. He says, a fire is going to test each one's work. And in verse 18, let no one deceive himself. If anyone among you seems to be wise in this age, let him become a fool that he may become wise. Paul was never going to use tactics of the world to achieve results in the Corinthian church. They were. He says, I won't be doing this. He simply explained to them what God says. And he was extremely clear. Now, Jesus said this, and let me conclude on this point. Matthew 7:24. Whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And if you want to be a wise man, you consider what Christ said in the Sermon on the Mount. And there were a number of principles that fly in the face of conventional wisdom. For instance, 5:39 says, but I tell you not to resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. I'm not here to explain the ramifications of that or the application of that necessarily, but just to simply state it, that conventional wisdom says this is foolish. God's wisdom says this works. He says, you have heard that it was said in verse 43, chapter 5, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Yes or no? Good wisdom, bad wisdom, what? God says it's good wisdom. You're going to be a person who will build your house. What is your house? What about your own family? You know, let me put it in these terms. One of the most important things your children can see about you is how you handle adversity. How you handle adversity. And if they can see that the setbacks, the disappointments, what people do to you on the road, in the office, how somebody stabs you in the back, and you can see how you handle this. Your sons, your daughters can see how you're doing this. Ladies, what does your daughter see? How they see this then is going to pay great dividends. By your true wisdom, is demonstrated by one's conduct. And then what you say will get traction. What you say then will carry weight. But if you say that and you act a different way, then I want to tell you something. You have given them an out to go and act however they want to act. So very important then, the godly wisdom. What is the result of loving those who do not love you? We have a number of things then that we could say here. Anger, James 1:19. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Hillary and Obama should never follow this if they want to be president. You got to become indignant at your attacks. And you got to be quick to speak. The wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. You can take this right out of the book of Proverbs, and you see it in the book of James. Let me say that the book of James is the New Testament equivalent to the book of Proverbs. A lot of other areas, anger, arrogance, pride, self-importance, self-reliance, a loose tongue, James covers it all. Now, it's important then to determine your conduct and to understand what it is you're going to achieve. What does God support? What will work? What will pay dividends? What will give you the benefits that I know deep down you really want? God's way. Not one that will give you immediate results. You can use a lot of authority. You can use heavy-handedness, for instance. You can seek retribution. You can get fast results that way. Immediate, observable, measurable. I want to tell you something. If you do it God's way, you'll find not only do they work, will they work for now, they will work forever. We've only scratched the surface. Let me conclude with this and tell you what God will support in James 4, 6, and 7. But he gives the more grace. James 4, verses 6 and 7. But he gives the more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, submit to God and resist the devil, and he will flee from you. What does God support? God supports humility. What attracts the devil? Pride, self-seeking. What causes a lot of trouble? All right. So there we are. What results do we want? What methods will you use? How long will it take to get them? Are those results certain? What are the alternative methods, the human and the devil's, and their results? It's something to think about. Perhaps that's all I'm doing today, is to help you think about them. We've only scratched the surface. But perhaps to clarify some things as to God's way, devil's way, human's way, and be a little clearer than how we may apply them in our own lives. Thank you very much. You've been very kind, very patient, which is one of the characteristics of wisdom.